When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That scene in which they go outside to smoke a joint, and there's a moth that goes over to Ruffalo and then lands on his hand and sits there perfectly.
Yeah.
And he, like, midline, like, studies the moth, and then it sods off on the other side of the frame.
As if it was trained to do that.
Perfect bit of happenstance.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
That feels like the theatre kind of background, doesn't it? Of not just the performers, but also Lonergan. Like, let's see where this goes.
Yeah.
There we go. And they probably did after that. They did a new take because our moth was in shot. And then it's great that they used it. Like,
yes. Moth. Best supporting moth.
Halfway to 100, it's episode 50.
As always, guys, we have all the show notes online at flixwatcher.tv for all the episodes, so please come and visit us there. Of course, join us on Twitter at flixwatcherpod, and please come to iTunes, rate us, and subscribe. So all films were available on Netflix at the time recording, guys.
There will be spoilers and bad language. You have been warned. Hello and welcome to this edition of the Flixwatcher podcast. Today we are joined by Simon and Sam, and they are from the Picture House podcast. Would you like to go say hello and introduce yourselves? Tell us a little bit more about your podcast.
Hello, my name is Simon. This is my voice here. And what does your voice sound like, Sam?
Well, Simon, my voice sounds like this.
Don't do an impression of my voice.
So yeah, because it's quite similar there.
It'll be a nightmare.
We are, I mean, yeah, we decided to record a strictly audio podcast, knowing that we both have very similar voices and that we'll primarily be the only two people speaking.
Perfect.
About films that we mostly often have the same opinion about.
That's true. So we do a weekly review show for Picture House Cinemas. And we have lots of guests on the show, which is nice, directors and writers and actors and creative people, which is really fun. And yeah, it's like a weekly roundup of the best stuff that's showing at Picture House across the land. And it's a bit of fun.
It's just a bit of fun.
It's just a bit of fun, guys.
And I think it's a nice twist because a lot of other podcasts that do stuff on a weekly basis, they kind of review the chart as a whole. But because of the way the Picture House is kind of focused on, you have the big films, but you also have a lot of the smaller independent films. It's good to see what's playing well.
Yes.
In the Picture House versus what's...
We do a little recap of the top five highest grossing films at Picture House Cinemas over the last week. So like, this is what you guys have been going to see, and then we'll do the new releases of the week and then any interviews that we've done in the time. It's good fun. Yeah. We've been doing it for seven years.
Oh, really?
Wow.
So you must have been right at the cusp there of the podcasting.
We initially did, it was initially the Ritzy podcast for just the Ritzy in Brixton. And then they asked us if we wanted to do, the marketing people asked us if we wanted to do it for the whole chain, and we just said, yeah.
So we'll carry on talking.
Why not?
And, you know, just forcing our opinions on people. That would be delightful.
And they're yet to stop us doing that.
Yes,
very, very generous.
As long as you're enjoying it, then great.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, do you have, I mean, the Picture House cinemas that I've been to are pretty grand venues. Do you have a favourite Picture House?
Ooh.
Allowed to say?
Probably not, but yes. I imagine that your answer will be the same as mine, but we lived very close to the Ritzy together for a number of years, and it sort of became our spiritual home. I'd be lying to you if I didn't say that screen one at the Ritzy isn't my favourite screen in the UK.
The Ritzy is really special because we did start sort of doing the podcast there, and I used to work there. I was a projectionist, and I worked for the house for a while.
Yeah.
And Screen One at the Ritzy is a lovely Art Deco cinema screen. It's well worth. It's kind of odd going there to see something brand new, like say a Transformers film.
Yeah.
You're in a cinema that was built in 1911, with beautiful Art Deco arches and lots of original features there. But then also giant robots kicking the shit out of each other on screen. My favourite thing I think I saw there was The Artist, when everybody was so hyped and it was sold out, and it just felt right, you know, like it was absolutely packed. People were like having a great time, lots of laughter, and then the cinema looked like it belonged in the film. That was such a treat.
It was beautiful. I remember that very well. Yeah, it's a lovely place.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Picture House Central.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, I can't.
It's
help.
A great place. 2 years old as of next Saturday.
Yeah, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah, Scream One's the best. Atmos done. Yeah. Thanks very much.
We're talking about.
Not cinemas.
We're talking about watching stuff at home, but obviously we need to refer back to where you guys come from. But we're talking about the Kenneth Lonergan Kalo film.
Yes.
You Can Count on Me, yes. Which is your choice, Simon.
It is my choice, and thank you so much for letting me revisit one of my favourite ever films.
Cool.
So, yes, I chose You Can Count on Me, which is written and directed by Kenneth Lonergan. This is how I like to refer to You Can Count on Me. I like to call it from the writer of Analyze This, yeah. The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle, and one episode of Doug comes You Can Count on Me. And like, Kenneth Lonergan is a very interesting and multifaceted man. He is a playwright by trade who then transferred to the silver screen. He's sort of had like 4 or 5 hit plays. And this is the first of his 3 films. And to give you a quick synopsis, it's a funny one to try and sum up, really, because it's sort of a film that doesn't... It sort of defies synopsis. I mean, it's the story of a brother and a sister. The sister, Sammy, played by Laura Linney, has lived in her hometown all her life. She's mid-30s and lives with her 8-year-old son, Rudy. And her sort of semi-estranged brother, played by Mark Ruffalo, comes back to stay under the pretense that he just wants to spend some time with her and her son. He's actually run into a bit of trouble and he wants to ask her for some money. And he ends up staying a bit longer than anticipated. And the film is about the relationships between the two of them and her son, Rudy, and a few other key players in the town. And I truly, truly think it's one of my 100% favourite films. I think Lonergan's a bit of a master. He's made 3 films in 17 years, and I think they're all absolutely exceptional and like 3 of the best films. The main reason I chose this film is that it feels to me like it's a little hidden gem. Netflix are habitually terrible at marketing their own material and everything that's on their website, but I think that it's important to highlight films like You Can Count on Me, which I think is a work of astonishing greatness and that just sits there. And I think that's maybe part of a larger discussion about Netflix, but like it's interesting that these little hidden gems are there. And like that's the great thing about your podcast is that
that's why I bring people like you to unpick and
very kind.
Get the pickaxes out and unearth these gems.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this before. I'd seen Manchester by the Sea.
Right.
Looking back at Kalo's oeuvre, I've seen... Well, he wrote Gangs of New York, for example.
He did.
So I haven't seen it. I saw it at cinema and loved it at the time, but I haven't seen it since then. But he's been the opposite of prolific.
Yes.
In the same way as like Tom Ford and Patty Jenkins, I guess.
Sure, they take their time.
Yeah, and that's actually fine because on the flip side is like Woody Allen.
Sure, you're chucking like, one out one a year, yeah. and the quality is of, it's certainly very mixed. I mean, yeah, and then, so then... Yeah, if you take someone like Woody Allen, then Allen's what was his last good film? Blue Jasmine, and then before that, what?
Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
Manhattan.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about Manhattan. Like, there, mixed thoughts on that here, didn't we?
If you've not revisited it in a while, then.
I've not. Some of the sexual politics might be.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I'm not surprised. I can't be bothered. I just can't be bothered. Fuck that guy. I think it's. I think it's a really interesting film, especially, I don't know how you, have you guys seen Margaret?
I haven't seen Margaret, no.
So Margaret is an interesting one as well. But I was trying to imagine what the experience might be like to have seen Manchester by the Sea and then watch You Can Count on Me afterwards, because there are so many things that cross over there, like the way he used the camera and the use of music and even just things like fishing, like various bits and pieces that, and you know, human frailty and fragility and broken people, and
Matthew Broderick,
who is also in Margaret,
and yeah, he's a lucky charm, and he's from Kalo. I love that Kalo is happening.
Yes, it's important to make it happen.
He's from his theatre days, and I think they are Matthew personal Broderick friends. Is. And Kalo. Okay. Embro and Kalo. They're friends outside of work, and I think they've worked together in theatre. Yeah. So it's kind of nice that he's been there in a very small role in Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah.
See a much bigger role in here, and in Margaret, he's somewhere in between.
Yeah.
But obviously with this one, I'm pointing at a screen that the listeners can't hear. But You Can Count on Me, obviously Matthew Broderick is there for financing, because the film stars Mark Ruffalo and Laura Linney, and Mark Ruffalo at the time wasn't in any of the Avengers yet.
No.
It was one of his first like properly good films that you'd actually want to go and see. He did a lot of genre films, sequels, TV shows and things before this, and lots of theatre work as well, and I think they met through the stage. But this is probably his first good film.
So
such a huge star.
What kind of thing was Ruffalo doing? Because the first film that came for me that came onto his radar was The Kids Were All Right.
Oh, wow.
Sure, right.
And that was about 5 years after You Can Count on Me.
Right.
Christ, what is early Ruffalo? What's 20th honestly, century
he was
Ruffalo?
It was like television shows, like sequels to horror movies. I think he maybe did something that looked half decent before this, maybe 2 years before this film, but this seems to be the one.
And this was
got him noticed, and of course it did, because he's great in it.
Yeah,
the little Sundance film that propelled him and Kenneth to bigger things.
I mean, even Linney wasn't at a bankable kind of character at that point.
She had done
The Truman Show, hadn't she? Or was it about the same time?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same time. I mean, but there's, you know, she'd done Primal Fear and Congo. So, like, she was on the...
Kinsey as well.
On the up, yeah. Or Kinsey's a few years afterwards, but still cracking, I think.
Yeah.
And I really love... that's the key thing for me in this. I mean, I think that Lonergan is a really great guy, but it's Linney that makes this sell for me. I think she's just astonishing. I love, honestly, everything about her performance. It's difficult to not try to sound too hyperbolic about it, but I think she, there's such a strength and a conviction to her performance. And all the while you can feel her and the character trying to sort of facilitate this strong sheen, even though things are collapsing and crumbling and she's not on the strongest of foundations beneath all that. And I think she's a marvel. I'm really deeply in love with her. She's
Helen, what were your thoughts? And you haven't seen Manchester by the Sea.
I haven't, no, but this has been on sort of the list for a while, because obviously Mark Ruffalo, Who doesn't love Mark Ruffalo, really?
Sure.
So this was, and obviously Laura Linney as well.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. It is two great performances, you know, by when they have done greater and more different and wider performances, but it just feels very real, and not saying it, that obviously his experience is very stagey. It doesn't feel stagey at any point. And even though it kind of, it should be miserable, but it's not, because they bring such energy, and they're two characters who things aren't going right, and you know, there's not really a resolution at the end either. So it's just kind of like a snapshot into their life at one particular time that's obviously been influenced by something that happened a long, long time ago that's still with them. And you're just kind of looking into those few weeks that he's there. And then he goes away, and you're just left to think, well, what's going to happen to both of them, really? Because they've both had such an intense time there, which is obviously going to then shape what happens in the next time as well.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. I feel that the film, the sort of the beauty of the film is that we've all seen films about small town, middle class America that are sort of vaguely like humdrum and drab and sort of do the same sort of plodding things and with an eventual dramatic resolution. And what this film has to its advantage is total 100% emotional authenticity. These are real people that feel like real people. Like this, it just feels like real life. And I I buy it. I totally wholesale buy it. I think you don't get films like that very often.
I think Ruffalo plays this kind of character really, really well. Mm. And the last film, outside of the Hulk side of things, his character in Spotlight, sure. Have you seen that?
Sure.
Where he just plays that, he seems like he's just a plodding research journalist going from place to place. And there's that one scene where he really kind of just unleashes his kind of fear and anger and everything.
The Oscar moment,
yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's just kind of asterisk, this is your Oscar moment, Mark. Yeah,
exactly.
Close asterisk.
It is 100% that.
But it's understated but powerful, I think, how sure. He plays these kind of roles. And
I think, in Spotlight especially, it's quite an affected performance. It's same with Foxcatcher as well.
Yes, that's quite a lot. Yeah, true.
I think this is my... you'll be unsurprised to learn that this is my career best for Ruffalo, because I think it's sort of like... It's almost an unaffected performance, and I think that he has become a little more affected with age. And yeah. I like seeing sort of early, ready-salted Ruffalo before we get the mad stuff later on.
Is second place Dancing in His Pants with Kirsten Dunst, which is up there in my favourites.
Yeah, it's certainly up there.
It's a film I've never heard of.
Oh, mate.
Is it?
I mean...
It's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah. Oh, he did that before this. That was the one thing he did before.
Yes, of course.
There you go.
That was the little film I forgot.
That was the first thing I saw him in.
Another Sundance.
Because some of these films you need to re-watch again to reacquaint when the first time you met people. Because when you talked about Truman Show, I'd forgotten that Laura Linney was in Truman Show. But that film so wasn't about her in any way, shape, or form. And, and same with Spotless Mind. It wasn't about Ruffalo. It wasn't about Kirsten Dunst. When Jim Carrey's in the film like that and it's centered around him, it's not about anyone else that's in that film. But I think we were watching it
in different ways. I don't know. That's what I remember.
I remember Kirsten Dunst in pants and Ace Ventura. But I think we need... Yeah, I think I need to watch it again because I remember loving it. But I've only seen it once, and I thought it was just an excellent film, and just thought that,
I mean, there's so many others. The Kids Are All Right is great,
brilliant.
As well.
Yeah, it's good.
He's kind of like an older version of this character who's got a little bit more leery about him.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. He's a very talented man. Almost every character in this film has an underlying fragility to them. In fact, the Ruffalo character is the one where that vulnerability is most on the surface. And he just plays it so beautifully. It's heaven. Heaven.
This film also features something that Kenneth Lonergan is very good at, which is finding new talent. And this has Rory Culkin, brother of Macaulay, in his feature film debut. And Rory hasn't had the same career or life as Macaulay, which may be a good thing. But he is he's like regularly in very good films. He was in a few years ago a feature film debut called Electric Children, where he had a lead role.
Opposite,
film that launched an actress called Julia Garner, his career.
It's terrific.
He was most recently in Wiener Dog, the new Todd Solondz film. And playing, like, even though in this film he must be about 8 or something, in Wiener Dog it feels like he's basically playing the same character. But this film put him on the map. And in Manchester by the Sea, Kenneth Lonergan has a child actor in that who's very good.
Yeah.
And in Margaret, he filmed it so long ago, Anna Paquin was basically still a child. It just
really
took
was.
7 years to actually be released.
Yeah. endless legal battles with Fox. That was a real nightmare. The Quinn character in Margaret's 17, 16? I mean, I imagine she's slightly older than the character that she's playing, but...
She's in high school, isn't she? The whole thing is about her being in high school. But the film was released when she was also in a new X-Men film where she plays a much older character. It's very odd to get your head around.
It was a bit of a time warp when that came out in 2011. It was a strange feeling. But yeah, to see his second film 11 years after the first one was a bit of a thrill, certainly, yeah.
I think Rory Culkin was actually one of the stars of this as well. Mm. Very... As a child actor as well, he held it really well.
Absolutely.
There's no kind of obvious hamminess, and I think it just kind of flowed really well from him.
Yeah.
And you could see him hanging out with his uncle. I think the scenes that played out there, just working alongside his uncle in the next to the building and playing pool with him, and
lovely scene.
Lying to your mum.
Yeah. I'll try not to be a broken record, but it does feel totally real. Like we've all had those, when they're coming home from the bar and they're trying to sort of rush in before mum gets back, and like we've all had moments like that, and they're played with such authenticity. Yeah, it's a funny film to try and sum up, but I think can I read you something very quickly from a US critic called David Edelstein, who I think does a really, really great job of articulating what I'm trying to articulate. Can I read it? It'll take
absolutely,
me 10
yeah.
seconds. So David Edelstein called this film the best American movie of the year. Noting that what the film is about can't be summed up in a line. Its themes remain just out of reach, its major conflicts sadly unresolved. But Lonergan writes bottomless dialogue. When his people open their mouths, what comes out is never a definitive expression of character. It's an awkward compromise between how they feel and what they're able to say, or how they feel and what they think they should say, or how they feel and what will best conceal how they feel. The common term for this is subtext, and you can count on me as a subtext so powerful that it reaches out and pulls you under. And that's honestly how I feel about it. I think it's such a subtle and complex and moving film that feels to be on the surface not taxing in the slightest, but what you're actually experiencing is something quite rich and of high quality. I think it's just so cool. so cool. Yeah.
I mean, we were discussing before we started recording that if you've ever sort of looked at the cover for the DVD or sort of seen the poster for
it's lame.
I mean, the poster is lame, and I'm not a big fan of the title either.
Although can we talk about the title though? Because you know, there's moments in films when the title turns up and it's a total nightmare and it's set by one of the characters.
Yeah.
So I have a flatmate and we call those moments bell moments, and we have a bell next to our television and we ring the bell every time the character says anything.
Yeah.
And what I love about You Can Count on Me is that it is one of cinema's only examples of the anti-bell moment, which is, you know, the I'm sure you remember the last exchange of dialogue on the bus station. Obviously the film title has never turned up in the film, and Mark Ruffalo says, you remember what we said to each other when we were kids, and Laura Linney says, yes, of course, I'll never forget, and that's the last, and we know that it's the title of the film, but it's beautifully unspoken, so you can't ring the bell. You cannot ring the bell. I love that. I love that moment so much. But yeah, it's a bad title. It's such a lame, like, Maeve Binchy sort of title.
Yeah, and as we were saying, that if you don't know what it's about, it does look like kind of a weird romantic comedy drama
rom-com
between them, which is nothing at all like it is, and I don't know, it's just weird. They need to redesign it, I think.
Yeah, it's bad marketing, but I mean, how the hell do you sell that film? I mean,
that's what I was thinking. How did this kind of get made in the first place? It takes someone who's seen the film to say to a friend who you know will like this kind of film to say, you should watch You Can Count on Me, because I don't know, I can't remember at all if Netflix presented this to me as a choice.
Right.
But had it come up with the images we see here, I probably would have thought,
no.
I don't see why.
Yeah, it looks like a lame best friend comedy where of them probably gets a terminal illness and then shuffles off.
After I watched this, then the other films that were presented to me included What's Your Number, the Anna Faris kind of film. So that would have kind of fallen in that kind of...
Yeah, no thanks.
That radar of...
How did that work? Come on, Netflix.
Yeah, come on.
Sort your algorithms out, pal.
Those algorithms. Yeah, it's nightmarish. But yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, in terms of getting it made in the first place, Lonergan was the sort of toast of the New York theatre scene in the 90s. And like, This Is Our Youth, which was his first major play, won some key awards. And then he made a friend in Scorsese, and he made a friend in Anthony Minghella.
Yeah, Scorsese is the exact producer on this, isn't
he? And Minghella on Margaret. He was, you know, he'd had this in his back pocket for a while and touted it around the studios, and that was that.
I'm sure it would have been made for very little money as well.
Yeah, fuck all. It's not a risk for a studio at all. And they'd know it was a Sundance thing going in, and that's what it was. And I think it won two awards at Sundance. And then as Kismet, which is nice, You Can Count on Me was nominated for two Oscars, screenplay for Lonergan and
Laura Linney.
Linney for actress, and then didn't win either, but then Manchester won two Oscars, which were screenplay and
actor
which is a shame. But I mean, the fact that Lucas Hedges isn't the recipient of that best supporting is it's a madness as far as I'm concerned. I think it's one of the best
parts of Manchester by the Sea.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, one of the best supporting performances in memory, I think. I think it's amazing. Also, another common theme, people crying on beds in both of those films. In all three of those films, people sitting on a bed and having a cry or having a little breakdown.
Loves to cry on a bed.
Well, let's see if that's a recurring theme in the oeuvre of Kalo.
I've just cracked the Netflix algorithm. Oh, yeah. Okay, I was doing a really wonderful speech about the accolades of Lonergan.
Sorry, yeah,
so you said it was What's Your Number, which is the Anna Faris rom-com, which also stars a fellow Avenger, Chris Evans.
And actually has
a cameo from Chris Pratt, who later is in Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's like Netflix was like, you like seeing Marvel superheroes out of their costumes, Kobe.
Yeah, that's it. That's definitely it.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, you've smashed it.
Sorry, I missed what Simon said there, was it?
No, it was boring. Nothing to worry about.
I'd like to talk a bit about Matthew Broderick's character in this.
Yes, let's talk about Broderick.
Ferris Bueller is the one I go online saying is my favourite film. So it's always interesting seeing him play against type as a...
Yeah.
And in Manchester by the Sea, he plays a bit of a dick. In this, he plays a massive dick, but very, very fragile.
Yeah.
But well-drawn out character. Because if she'd simply had an affair with Brian, Matthew Broderick's character, it would have been kind of a flat thing. I would have been kind of pissed off with it. But you kind of see how well drawn out and helpless he is as a person. He's kind of really pathetic, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Complaining about people's screens, complaining about someone leaving for 15 minutes to go and drop the kid off at the childminder. It's just kind of like, dude, what are you playing at? Mm.
It's a little bit like his role in Election.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, he's watching this. He's having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can just tell.
Definitely.
I think people kind of write him off a little bit and forget that his performances are actually really good.
Yeah,
he's great.
And he manages to kind of bring a bit of humanity to characters that are not necessarily likable, but they're kind of trying to be, and they're trying to do the right thing all the time, but things don't quite work out for them.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing that I really love, especially about the character of Brian, is that he's only there to serve the character of Sammy. That's literally his whole purpose. I love the use of sexuality in this film. Like, how many times do we get to see a woman in her mid-30s with an 8-year-old son get to enjoy her wholesome sex life without shame or judgment?
No.
She's literally just living her life and making her choices. And I love that stuff. Like, it's the only reason that he's there. It's the only reason that Bob is there.
And she has the conversation with the Reverend at the time.
Yeah, who's played by Kenneth Lonergan.
Played by Kalo.
Great performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah, he's really fantastic. Good. Yeah.
Just those two scenes. He's really wonderful.
And she shouts at him saying, no, it's not, it's up to me to do what I want to do. It shouldn't be, if it's a sin, it should be, I can't phrase it at all.
No, I know what you mean.
But it was that kind of turnaround, that kind of head-to-head was on her terms. It wasn't Kayla's character saying, you are really bad, you're doing this wrong thing by having sex with people who are married and out of wedlock and stuff like that. So it was a really kind of interesting take on that. And she wasn't being vindicated for it. She wasn't being abused for it. It was just, this is me, this is what I'm doing. And she felt kind of bad for it, but at the same time it was kind of like, well, this is how it is, and I'm going to live my life and que sera, sera.
Yeah. It's smart and authentic. People have affairs.
Well,
it happens all the time, and it's so strange that cinema can be so prudish about these things, and I love it when it's not and you get something that feels real.
And she wasn't that remorseful about it.
No, she doesn't give a fuck.
She was just like,
big deal.
I fucked my boss.
Oh, can we talk about that scene and the best supporting moth? Oh, my God.
Best supporting moth? Oh, the moth...
that scene in which they go outside to smoke a joint and she confesses, not a confession, she tells her brother that she fucked her boss. There's a moth that sort of cycles into shot, not on a bike, and like flirts with Laura Linney a little bit, sort of like flirts around her, and then goes over to Ruffalo and then lands on his hand and sits there perfectly.
Yeah.
And he, like, midline, like, studies the moth, and then it sods off on the other side of the frame. And it's just...
as if it was trained to do that.
Perfect bit of happenstance.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. So I'd forgotten about that moth. And every time I watch that film, and I've seen it a lot, every time I watch that film, I'm struck by it. So I went back and I watched the moth scene again. And that I mean, the moth shot is just like a simple two shot, but it doesn't cut. But the establishing shot of that scene is from behind them. And so we see just the backs of them and the stars above them. And in that establishing shot, a moth.
Or the moth stunt double.
Or the stunt double, like, floats across the screen. So what I want to know is, is, like, Kenneth Lonergan sitting just out of shot, like, chucking moths into the frame to get this great moth moment? Or is it just, like, a mothy area? What's going on here? Well, how do we find out?
I do remember seeing that, and I just thought it was quite a cool thing, because it kind of looked like he was batting it away, but then he caught it on his finger and just kind of thought, oh, that's quite nice.
And it sits there. Like, and neither of them break. No. And, like, the dialogue just keeps flowing, and, It's like another thing that contributes to the total authenticity of the drama.
That feels like the theatre kind of background, doesn't it? Of not just the performers, but also Lonergan. Like, let's see where this goes.
Yeah,
okay,
here
we go. And they probably did after that. They did a new take because Moth was in shot. And then it's great that they used it.
Like, yes, Moth. Best supporting Moth.
Yeah, you can probably see other actors going, there's a moth here. I can see a moth. It's like in my eye line. We need to stop this shit now because...
No, not Linney and Ruffalo. Like, yeah. The professionals.
Keep on at it.
They get it. Yeah, definitely.
Right, should we go on to the scores?
Yes.
So first up, we have the recommendability score. These are all out of 5.
Okay.
So how much would you recommend this to someone? And we'll start with you, as it's your film.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you're not going to be surprised by my score. I've spent the last... Oh, I didn't see it in the year 2000, actually. I didn't see it until 2005. But I have spent the last 12 years recommending this film to people. It has to be a 5. I can't recommend it enough. It's one of my favourite films. 5.
So when you first went on Netflix, do you kind of test it every now and again to see what kind of films it has on there, to see if it's...
Do I? Yes, I suppose I do. I do use it a lot. I mean, almost daily. I certainly do. I like to test it by actor, actually. I really like doing it by performer and just seeing, you know, even like Linney, and seeing like, oh, I wonder if they've got The Nanny Diaries. I wonder if they've got Lorenzo's Oil.
Yeah.
I
wonder, like,
and it's unlikely. But sometimes you get a Congo. So sometimes, you know, you can luck out there.
You nearly retracted this choice, didn't you?
Yeah,
in the early days. Yeah. You picked it and then...
You said you weren't sure.
You were questioning it.
That isn't 5 recommendation if you're going to retract your choice.
No, well, that's true. I know what you mean. No, God, did I tell you what I was going to choose instead, maybe?
I'd already got my heart set on watching this. So okay. I was like, no, we're having that.
No, fair enough. Oh, God, what was I going to... I can't remember what... If I can remember, I'll let you know.
So it was a deliberation type of thing?
Yeah, I think I was going to go for something a bit more schlocky. And then I was like, no, follow your heart. Good. Follow your heart.
Sam.
Oh, it's going to be really boring if we give the same score. So I think I want to just torpedo it by saying one. No.
Oh, yeah. Cheers, mate.
No, but it is... Simon's right to recommend it because I think for a couple of things, Manchester by the Sea was such a big hit.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And Margaret was criminally underscreened, the second feature. It actually opened in only one venue in the whole of the UK, the Odeon in Panton Street, because Fox were trying to bury it because it cost them so much money after all the legal battles and re-editing and stuff. So they sort of released it in one cinema.
Can I just say that Odeon in Panton Street, I think, is a fantastic cinema in London.
It's very curious.
The programming there is actually really diverse. That's it's great. Really eclectic.
You can see anything there.
It's where everybody's trying to dump their movie.
If it's nowhere else, it's at the Panton Street.
It's so bizarre, isn't it?
It's a funny little
literally
site.
You can see it from Leicester Square. It's like, wave hi.
It's
a little shed. It's a weird little place.
It's good because when they talk to people, they can say, I work in the Odeon on Leicester Square. And then people turn up at the big one and like, no, the other one. It's actually slightly off Leicester Square. Okay, it's on Panton Street. But I think because Lonergan has got so big, especially with winning the Oscars this year and things, I think people, it's important for people to see where someone started and to see, come closer, to see... how people have sort of progressed, but also the themes that run through his work. And this has got a lot of similarities with Manchester by the Sea, yep. And oh, maybe yeah. It does some of them better.
So
it's a 5.
He's gone 5. Go big or go home, or just choose a different number.
By the way, you can go to decimal places.
Okay, oh. That's good to know. Yeah.
Helen?
Oh, I'm going to join the 5 club as
well. Oh, really?
Yeah. Sweet. I mean, it was made in 2000, and it doesn't feel that it was made. It's got a very... other than the phones, other than they don't have mobile phones,
yeah,
that's the only thing that really ages it.
And the computer screens in the bank.
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course.
I'm pretty sure a lot of banks still have computers.
That's
like that.
True. Yeah. I bet banks have outdated computers. But yeah, the fact that like Linny and Broderick can't text each other and like she has to like call up his home and then his wife picks up, like, oh, okay, we're in the past. We're totally in the
past. Yeah, proper old school answer phones with the tapes and stuff like that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4, I think.
Fair enough, mate. Yeah. Fair enough.
Very good. I think I prefer Manchester by the Sea to this. I was kind of thinking there's going to be one core thing that happens.
Right.
That
the dramatic says, yeah. The dramatic high without ruining anything of Manchester by the Sea is definitely higher than it is in this. In You Can Count on Me.
And I think there's a couple of standout scenes where you're just kind of like, oh. Mm. But I think in this it was really, it's just how they played it together. And I really love low-key, well-acted films, but I think that's will make it hard to recommend to some people.
And
that's why if someone recommends me, I think fantastic, cheers, and thank you very much for doing so. But
it's my absolute pleasure.
There'll be people I think would just be bored to tears by this,
and those people are wrong. Sorry guys.
Repeat viewing, I think. Well, you've said you've watched it many times already.
I have seen it a lot, and I think that it is emotionally rich and dense, and the moth scene never gets old. I mean, I was repeat viewing it while I was repeat viewing it. Like, I had to go back a scene and watch the moth again. That's a repeat view within a repeat view. It's not like the sort of thing that I would stick on while I was doing some emailing or anything. It's not like an every 6 month there. But it is certainly something that I have seen a lot of times, and I think... It does. I mean, I'm ending up watching it sort of every 18 months or so, which is quite...
I think in this day and age, that's very, very frequent, actually.
Yes, seeing as choice is so diverse currently. So I'd say, what will I go for on repeat? I do watch it fairly often. So I'm going to say a solid 4 for repeat viewing from this guy.
I think... You're right. You have to be in the right frame of mind to watch it. It's not like let's all come over to ours, we'll have some beers, let's put on You Can Count on Me.
Yeah, you're right.
But when you do revisit it, it does reward. So
You've seen it a couple of times, right?
This is my second time. Right. But I watched it only very recently for the first time because it was on Netflix and I'd seen Manchester by the Sea and I loved Margaret and I was like, I should probably complete the trilogy, the old Kalo trilogy. Yeah. And it does hold up to a second watch in only 6 months or so between it. But again, you do have to be in the right frame of mind. So it would be like it isn't like an obvious rewatch, but when you go there, it does reward you. So it's kind of hard to rate, I guess, because you know a rewatch will probably be enjoyable, but actually you have to kind of pluck up the courage to get to it.
Sure.
So maybe it's like a 3.5 for a rewatch.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
It's not going to stay on repeat.
Yeah. It's not going to be on the cycle.
Oh, well, this is a first time for me.
Yeah.
And I would watch it again. I don't know how soon I'd watch it again, but just for the Ruffalo factor, really.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 3.
Yeah. I think I'm going to join you on the 3 there.
Sounds about right,
doesn't Absolutely
it?
Absolutely would watch it again. Not sure when. And it's probably something I think I'd probably have to think. It'll probably just come up in my mind that, oh, I've not seen that for a while. Or it comes up in an article and think, yeah, I've not seen that for a while. I should maybe schedule it in.
Maybe when the next time we get a Kenneth Lonergan film in 10 years' time,
you'll
be like, oh, I'll watch You Can Count on Me again if it's still on
Netflix. Yeah, let's kind of make that round out that quadrilogy.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Small screen score. So how well does this work on a small screen? Do you feel the need to watch this in the cinema? Or do you,
Right, I see, yes. Well, I didn't see this film on its initial theatrical release in 2000. And I've only ever seen it on the small screen. Mm. But I think it feels like the sort of thing that has made a good transition to it. I mean, like, if one was being ungenerous, one might say that it's shot like an episode of Gilmore Girls. But I think there's more to it than that. But yeah, and I think it's perfect for the small screen. It's like a small homespun drama. So like, I don't quite know how to score that. But
so
like,
that seems like it's quite a high small screen score.
Okay. Yeah. So like, yeah, maybe like a 4.5.
Oops. Okay. Sam.
I think Simon gave a good score. He was like, it's a great home watch, but I still respect that the need to be in the cinema.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
I guess it's a tricky one because it's not like you need to see it because the explosions look cool on the big screen.
It's
but
I
guess if you did watch it on the cinema screen, maybe it would be more immersive. Maybe you would receive fewer text messages and whatnot.
Sure.
But a lot of people probably never saw this at the cinema because I reckon it had such a tiny, tiny release. It was probably an Odeon Panton Street for a week or so.
Yeah, but
and
it was.
So it's a film which is probably, like, Netflix is perfect for this film because it is a real discovery film after probably a very tiny initial release. But as all of the people involved have got bigger, they will seek it out. They'll be recommended it on the old Netflix algorithm.
So there will be a lot of people doing, as you do, Simon, say, Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'll see what this cat produced, and especially since things like Spotlight, where you can see him in the Hulk, and then he's in Spotlight, so people who look for Ruffalo can see that he has got more of a range to him.
Completists.
Absolutely. He's been the biggest film franchise in the world in the Avengers, and there's lots of fans who just love him because of that, but I reckon if they do sort of wander down his previous movies, they'll probably really enjoy them, and I think this is an excellent recommendation. So it's kind of feels perfect for something like Netflix, and it works really well on the small screen. I had a really great time watching it. Like, I don't know, maybe 4.5 as well.
It's a decent transfer as well. I was expecting, because there's no Can Count Me Blu-ray.
Blu-ray?
No, the DVD transfers have always looked like shit. But what we've got on Netflix is better than, I've got two DVD copies of it, and it's better than either of those. So it was genuinely really refreshing to see, like, it's in the best quality I've ever seen it in.
See that moth in the crystal clear quality for the first time.
Yes.
I do love that about Netflix. They often have, because they can source copies from all around the world, and no one may have licensed a Blu-ray, but it might have a DVD here, and you can often get better quality versions of the films on Netflix.
Oh, good.
I think Margaret was the same. There's only a DVD of Margaret, but when Margaret was briefly on Netflix, I don't think it's on there anymore.
No, it's
that
not.
Was in full HD. The only place to see it.
I rewatched Margaret today because I was just thinking about having rewatched You Can Count Me Yesterday. I was like, I'll give Margaret another go. Why not?
Helen.
Oh, I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah.
I'm going to drop it. Not going to drop it anywhere. I mean, again, exactly what you've all said. It is a real Netflix discovery. It's one of those that you might have skipped over just because it looks a bit odd and you're not quite sure what it's about, but you should definitely investigate it. And just watching it on your laptop or on your TV is, the perfect environment. It works really well.
Yeah. I think I'm going to get 4.75.
Oh, very strong.
Yeah. I think I don't think I need to watch it in the cinema, but there were some soundtrack moments which I can't remember what, they were just kind of fanfares in places.
Yeah, it's a bit of Bach and a bit of Handel and sort of gubbins. It's nice to hear in a big room.
It'd be nice to hear in say, Screen 1, Picture House Central, Atmos.
Can you imagine?
Oof. Lovely.
That's it. Lonergan likes to use classical pieces, doesn't he? Quite a lot.
He certainly does. It certainly does. It's all there. He's just making the same
trademark
film time after time after time. Kenneth Lonergan's made his film again, has he?
engagement score, Simon.
So this, I'm assuming, is like engagement as in like not looking at your phone, even though you're at home and you're not in a cinema. Well, I would say that this is a gentle film. And as such, it's not a mile-a-minute thriller. So you're not going to be necessarily like sitting on the edge of your seat. But I do think that I do think that it is engaging in a specific way. If you like, I would watch this film if I was relaxing, or if I was, as you said, like you're not going to get everyone around on a Friday night to watch You Can Count on Me, although I might. But most people are not going to do that. And I think if you allow yourself to engage with it early on, then I think the engagement level is potentially reasonably high, but I fully understand that people might be lulled into a sense of like phone checking or whatever. So I think I might go in the middle. I might go like 3.8.
Sure. Sam.
Fun to do those decimal points.
Really enjoying it. Yeah, the decimals have really come into play. We were all a bit nervous on the first one. We're really going for it with the decimals.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you have to, and that's the thing, I guess, when watching stuff on Netflix, you have to be very considerate of, like, you know, who else is in the room, what else is going on, will you be distracted, you know, like that kind of thing. Will the other person hate what I'm going to watch?
Yeah.
I feel like if you put this on and someone else just sort of like was like, what are you watching? What are you watching? I'll just sit down and watch it. I think you could accidentally watch the whole film and have a really good time. Because I think the characters are so appealing and it is such a beautiful reality to be in for like 2 hours or whatever. So yeah, I'm going to go 4 on engagement.
Okay.
I think once you're in, you're in.
I'm going to go for 4 as well. Nothing kind of really happens in it. So it doesn't have that kind of tension all the way through it, which is not a bad point of it, but it does mean that you may sort of be sort of distracted by the moth and then start thinking about moths a bit. I mean, I did look at my phone a little bit and answer a few messages, but my friend is due to have a baby, so I was finding out.
That's your reason.
Four. I don't see why there's any reason why you'd start watching it and not kind of stick with it, because they are so engaging. And as the length we've already discussed before we started recording, you know, it's nearly 2 hours, but it doesn't feel like that. It's not a slog.
It's not torturous time spent with them. I'm going to go a bit lower with engagement score here than you guys. I think I'm going to go around the 3 mark. And I think it kind of also almost ties in with the repeat viewing score side of things, whereby you have to be, I could see myself starting watching it and then thinking, actually not right now, and kind of diving out. But I think when you're in there, you're kind of locked, you are locked in and you want to pass the time. There's not much phone checking my wife came in through halfway through and I was quite happy to stop it and have the kind of a chat, and then she went away and I started watching it again. So that equates to about 3. I think 3 for this engagement score. And that's an overall score and a 4.13, which is...
That's quite strong, that is. Yeah.
Very strong
really
score
strong.
There.
It's a very strong film.
That superb moth supporting.
I mean, best supporting moth. I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday about the best supporting moth, and she was like, "Yeah, but is the best supporting moth the one that went on the footballer's face? Who was it? Ronaldo? I don't know who it was.
Remember the moth on the footballer's face?
Mothgate.
Yeah. Another great supporting moth.
So we did reach out to our Twitter community to ask what they thought about You Can Count on Me, and we have feedback from Beyond the Box Set saying funny, moving and humane, excellent script with career making performances from Lynn and Ruffalo. Broderick is also perfectly cast, and that's 4 stars from Beyond the Box Set.
Yes, I agree, Beyond the Box Set.
So the Boondoggle says negative stars, disappointed Mark Ruffalo did not turn into the Hulk once.
Oh, boo.
I think that may be a bit jokey.
Zero Hulk in this.
Sure.
Easy Rider Raging Podcast says, fantastic film that most people I know in the UK have not seen. And that's a fair point.
Didn't give a rating,
but I think that'd be quite high. We can infer between 4 and 5.
Yeah, fantastic.
Tom Kelly says, honest and complex human film, exceptionally well written and acted, love it. 4.5 stars.
Yeah.
So,
Nice one, Twitter.
Thanks
well done, Twitter,
for your report. So I think we'll sound off there, guys. If you can let us know who you are again, where you come from, and how we can find you.
I'm Sam Clements. I talk on the Picture House podcast with Simon, and I'm on Twitter at @Sam_Clements. I backseated a really hot one with the underscore tag.
Lucky
thought you. I'd just get in there and get the underscore before anyone else did.
And I'm Simon Renshaw. I am Sam's co-host on the Picture House podcast, which you can find on iTunes and SoundCloud and all the other places. And you can find me on Twitter at Cy Renshaw, which is my name.
Fantastic.
Super. Thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you very much
for having us.
Bye.
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 Thanks for listening. You can find all of the episodes on our website, flickswatcher.tv. Want to give us your 5-star review? Follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter. Big shout out to our editor, Brendan Russell, for all his awesome editing skills. And thanks as always to the mighty people for their tunes.